Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 25th of November, Anno Domini 2017. And you lucky people, at least those of you who have come out of your trip to Fancoma, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes
the news.
The news, exactly. If you have the uncomfortable sense someone is looking over your shoulder as you surf the web, you're not being paranoid.
No, they do it
enough.
Right here, this camera.
Exactly.
Rob's looking over my shoulder all the time.
Hi, Rob. Good morning. A new study finds hundreds of sites, including Microsoft.com, Adobe.com, and GoDaddy.com, employ scripts that record visitors' keystrokes, mouse movements, and scrolling behavior in real time, even before the input is submitted or is later deleted. Session replay scripts are provided by third-party analytics services that are designed to help site operators better understand how visitors interact with their web properties and identify specific pages that are confusing or broken. As their name implies, the scripts allow operators to reenact individual browsing sessions. Each click, input, and scroll can be recorded and later played back. A study published last week reported that 482 of the 50,000 most trafficked websites employ such scripts, usually with no clear disclosure. It's not always easy to detect sites that employ such scripts. The actual number is almost certainly much higher, particularly among sites outside the top 50,000 that were studied. Collection of page content by third-party replay scripts may cause sensitive information, such as medical conditions, credit card details, and other personal information displayed on a page, to leak to the third party as part of the recording, said Steve Engelhart, a PhD candidate at Princeton University, who took part in the study. This may expose users to identity theft, online scams, and other unwanted behavior. The same is true for the collection of user inputs during checkout and registration processes. Engelhart installed replay scripts from six of the most widely used services and found they all expose visitors' private movements to varying degrees. During the process of creating an account, for instance, the scripts logged at least partial input typed into various fields. Scripts from FullStory, Hotjar, Yandex, and SmartLook were the most intrusive because they, by default, they recorded all input types into fields for names, email addresses, phone numbers, addresses, social security numbers, and dates of birth. Even when services took steps to mask some of the data, they often did so in ways that continued to jeopardize visitor privacy. SmartLook and User Replay, for instance, collected the number of characters typed into password fields. That makes it so much easier if you know how large the password is. User Replay also logged the last four digits of visitors' credit card numbers. Engelhard said the services provided manual and automatic tools website operators can use to redact information that is collected on their properties. But the tools in many cases require large amounts of developer time and skill, and even then, sites with strong legal incentives not to leak sensitive data were found doing just that. Walgreens.com, for instance, sent medical conditions and prescriptions alongside usernames to FullStory, despite the extensive use of manual redactions on the pharmacy site. Until more robust protections are available, people should remember that just about anything they do while visiting a website can be logged. Now, one thing I've done is I've created a Google Docs spreadsheet, and as soon as Steve gets on board, which he hasn't done yet, he's working at it right now. As soon as he does that, he can put up the link to that spreadsheet, so you'll see the hundreds of them that are available at the moment, at least. And our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is: sites are watching your every move. Your choices, of course, are I knew it, I suspected it, and I don't care. So far, we've got 33 votes in, and most of you knew it. Others of you suspect it, and three of you apparently don't care if people have your stuff. And I know you'll have more to say to that, so if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the first choice there is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and so far at least the first item under poll discussion is 25 November 17. Sites are watching your every move. That also has a link to the spreadsheet, so you'll be able to check it out there as well. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. It's a sad thing that people are, in fact, keeping track of all of that stuff and sending it to companies like Full Story, who have nothing to do with your data except to have it, and they don't, and they shouldn't, quite honestly. But the reality is that it's there, and you need to understand that and be aware of it. And if you check through that list that I've put up, you'll see lots and lots of familiar sites in that list. So be a little careful of that. Oh, and before we go on much further, for those of you who own either a Google Home or an Amazon Echo device, you can also get this station on it. Simply say whatever the trigger word is. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. Whatever the trigger word is, play Jazz 90.1, and it will. So if you're home right now and you've got your Google Home with better speakers, or you've got your Echo device connected to huge speakers, you can now hear us in full blooming loveliness.
There was a similar social media fingerprint leak that they talked about on Security Now. Without you realizing it, you know, you might be logged into Google, you might be logged into Facebook. Every site you go to can tell what other sites you're logged into.
Yep.
So this is a leak rather than an intentional site looking for that stuff. But I'll post that in a minute. What's interesting, on my iPad, I'm logged into many more things than I am on the computer.
Well, that's interesting.
But then so, you know, the top one, I'm logged into Meetup, and the other ones it looks for are a lot of the other social media sites,
right,
to see if it's there. So right, it's kind of neat how it works. It tries to download the favicon from that site.
And oh, very interesting.
If it can, you're logged in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it can't, you're not. So.
Clearly, very interesting.
And so this researcher doesn't know if this is being used anywhere, but it probably is.
Yeah, I suspect it is. The other thing, of course, is one of the reasons I stopped using Firefox is they have something called, Facebook on my main browser.
One of those F things.
One of the F things. Some F word or other. I use it in a separate browser now because it has something called a super cookie, which means it can see everything you do on that browser when you're logged in. And I don't want it to. So I use one browser for Facebook and a different browser, not just a different browser instance. Right. So I actually use Firefox for Facebook and Google's Chrome for everything else. And so far, at least, I don't believe the super cookie can jump from browser to browser.
And that's basically because every website has a Facebook like button on it.
That's exactly right.
Or LinkedIn or Pinterest or, you know, every social network.
That's
so
right.
Your computer has a cookie from that network to say, yes, you're on this page too.
Yep. And they all do it. And there you are. I don't know what to tell you about that. It's just, don't pretend there's any privacy at all on the internet. And you'll probably be better off than you were. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Jason from Altoona, PA. How are things down in PA today, Jason?
Cold and miserable, as usual.
Ah, so you could be in Rochester and not know it.
Possibly, but I think I think I have less snow on the ground.
Oh, maybe.
Anyways, first, guys, thanks for the show, and hope you guys all had a good Thanksgiving.
Thanks. I hope you did, too.
Yeah, I worked Thanksgiving yesterday and today.
Wow.
And I'm not even in retail, so. Anyways, I am on my third tablet since the start of Black Friday. My Nexus 7 died a few weeks ago, and I've been trying to find a replacement, and so far nothing has worked. Any suggestions?
What hasn't worked? The tablets are dying, or...?
The first Samsung I tried, it wasn't even powerful enough to be able to run Netflix on regular definition video. The second one is, I haven't even been able to get through the setup program without the setup wizard crashing. And I have another Samsung that I just haven't had a chance to check out yet. But it's a lot more money than the other two tablets that I've tried, and I'm kind of hoping that something else may come along that's a little bit better for the price.
Yeah, part of the issue here, of course, as I'm sure you know, Jason, the less money you spend, the less tablet you get.
Yeah.
And there's no cure for that. If you've spent less than three, I mean, I've seen tablets as low as $54.
I'm sorry, what was that?
The less money you spend on a tablet, the less you're going to get. And I've seen tablets selling for $50.
They make a fine book reader, but don't watch videos.
They may make a fine book reader.
Yeah, the one I got was a $44 unit, and like I said, I couldn't even get through the setup program without the wizard crashing.
Yep.
But the catch was, everything I've tried the demo unit in the store, and it seemed responsive there. So,
well, part of it is how you're setting it up. If you're using, let's say you had a tablet that was a $300 or $400 tablet, and you had it loaded up with all kinds of great stuff. Now you buy a $44 tablet, and you try to load it up. You put the same, and it's an Android tablet. If you use the same username and password, it's going to try to load all that same stuff on it, and it's just not going to be able to handle it. So that's part of your problem. If you sign up with a different username, or before you open the new tablet, you delete a bunch of stuff from the old tablet, that might work.
What I've actually done is, because I've gone to the effort of having nice, strong, secure passwords that I don't want to bother taking the time to remember. in my defense, some of the passwords are over 100 characters long.
Well, that's a good thing.
But anyways, what I've done is I've created a bootstrapping account at Google. The only app it has in its record is the LastPass app. So I set the tablet up with that one, get the LastPass app downloaded to the tablet, and then from there I can load my Google apps with
right.
all my main Google accounts.
Right, but that's where you run into the problem. If you're loading a bunch of stuff...
Right, but I can't get to that point. That's the problem.
Yeah. I honestly don't know what to tell you. I had the same issue with... I told these guys a couple weeks ago I had to buy a... I had to get a Google Voice number for a startup that I'm involved with. So I went and bought a $30 smartphone. And it had enough minutes and texts to set up Google Voice, and now I'm done with that. So I've been using it as my Android iPod. And it's out of room. I can't fit half the stuff I want on it. I've put in an SD card, so I've got lots of music. But in terms of the software,
right.
I didn't even bother to use my normal account, because if I knew I had, it would have tried to load 32 meg of stuff into an 8 meg phone.
Right.
And, the other thing, too, though, is this is what we've run into over time. We're getting the technology, and we figure just everything should be able to do everything. But when you get into, like, a tablet and wanting it to do everything, say, like a laptop and a desktop and that can do, there's no matter, how much you go up in price and everything else on these tablets are still limited to what they can hold into them as far as processor speed and everything else. So they're not going to even perform. They'll do it. But, to compare it to like a laptop or to a desktop, you're not going to get it.
And a lot of times the demos they have on the floor are the highest models, fastest processor, most storage, to make them look good.
And they only show you that one thing. Because that's all the processor is focused on. It's not, worried about getting emails and doing this, all this other stuff in the background, which you might have running on a tablet to keep you safe. In other words, they're probably not watching as far as anti-spyware or virus protection or anything else, because that'll slow down a system. You know, and you don't want your tablet getting infected.
Right. And if you think about all the stuff you've put on a tablet, you're asking an inexpensive piece of hardware to do real expensive stuff. I hate to be the one to say that, but it's true. If you pay for what you get, and you get what you pay for. So
maybe try a $100 tablet.
Yeah, there you go.
And check the return policy in case it doesn't work.
All right, do you want to stay on the line?
Just real quick, when you come back, would you?
Yeah. Hold on. Stay on the line. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick, Francesco, Jason from Altoona, PA, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we still have Jason. Nope, apparently we don't have Jason. Sorry, Jason. Sorry we lost you. Call back.
No, he hung up.
Oh, he hung up.
Okay. Well, yeah, he wanted us to get into something, but we didn't hear what he wanted us to get into.
I apologize. We just come up against a hard stop, and there you are.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, because it's a shameless plug on my part, that I've published my next book on Kindle. It's called Chromebooks for Seniors, and it just went up Thursday. So that was nice. Yeah, who knows?
Where'd that music come from?
Well, no, it,
is that the other station?
No, I had the thing potted. I thought completely potted down, but there was still, it was not quite over the little
Yeah.
So it just.
That's a technical term, the little
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it good for? Okay.
Absolutely not.
All right. For you and me.
Oh, it's not this one. That's Google for Seniors.
Yeah, it's Google for Seniors. You want Chromebooks for Seniors.
That's what I searched for.
Chromebooks is one word.
That's what I typed in. It separated it to two.
I don't know what
it
to tell
knows
you.
Better than you.
Yeah,
there it is, right there. Yeah. Look at it. For you and me, or if you prefer, you and I, the Federal Communication Commission's plan to repeal net neutrality rules can be boiled down to two questions: what might happen, and whom do you trust? The net neutrality rules were passed in 2015. During the Obama administration, when Democrats controlled the FCC, the goal was to adapt regulations in such a way as to acknowledge the essential role of high-speed internet access as a gateway to modern communication, information, entertainment, and economic opportunity. So the FCC opted to regulate broadband service as a utility, making the internet the digital equivalent of electricity and the telephone. The major broadband and telecom companies like AT&T and Comcast have argued that utility-style regulation represents unnecessary government meddling that will reduce their incentives to invest and improve service. The result, they say, will be worse service for everyone in the long run. The biggest concern is that the internet will become pay-to-play technology with two tiers. One that has speedy service that you pay a bucket load of cash for, and one that doesn't. The high-speed lane would be occupied by big internet and media companies and affluent households. So everyone else there would be in the slow lane. The brand name internet companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Netflix, analysts say, will comfortably be able to pay the higher rent. It will not affect their business, though it may crimp their profits. Avoiding higher prices is one reason the major internet companies have been champions of net neutrality. But looking at it that way is looking at it with blinders on. Higher prices may be prohibitive for startup companies and new voices in the media and entertainment worlds. W. Kamau Bell, comedian and host of the CNN documentary series United Shades of America, recently described in the New York Times how the internet is so often the path to popular and commercial success for newcomers. They upload a video and it goes viral. That will no longer be true, Mr. Bell wrote, without net neutrality rules that ensure that anyone who puts something on the internet has a fair shot at finding a life-changing audience.
Yeah, think of when Netflix was starting or when YouTube was starting.
Yeah. That's right. The government-backed guarantee of equal access is why public interest groups, non-governmental organizations, charities, and millions of private citizens wrote the FCC in support of the net neutrality rules. But the broadband and telecom companies and some economists say that the freedom to charge different prices for different products and services is vital to healthy markets. That kind of price discrimination, they say, is the fuel of innovation and efficiency.
Boom.
The FCC, yeah. The FCC rules, well, those who don't understand history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
The FCC rules mandate net neutrality principles under a utility-style communications law called Title II that date back to 1934. The carriers fear that it all but ensures price regulation. What they really object to is Title II, not the net neutrality principles. Major telecommunications and broadband companies, including Comcast, have argued that the Internet should not be subject to utility-style government regulation. They say that reduces their incentives to invest and improve service. But supporters of net neutrality rules say repeal will give the Internet providers too much power. So, net neutrality or not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
John Oliver had another good rant, I guess, on net neutrality. And one of the things they had quoted Ajit Pai, current chairman of the FCC, blaming Obama for the last regulations. He happened to be president at the time, but he doesn't oversee the FCC.
Yeah, right.
He didn't tell him what to do. He said that infrastructure development...
Well, Obama's a trigger word for so many people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obama did it. Oh, but it must be bad.
Yeah. So we, you know, let's go dig up Bin Laden and bring him back to life, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So Ajit Pai said that when the Title II was enacted, all the internet companies stopped investing in infrastructure, and so John Oliver found the SEC quarterly conference call from Verizon, one of the giant infrastructure companies, and in this call, they are legally obligated to tell their shareholders what's going to be happening. They said it's not affected us at all. We haven't stopped, you know, building our infrastructure. You know, nothing's, you know, we don't see any difference between it. But then, you know, of course, the joke was since it was Verizon, every other word was lost.
Yeah. Well, the big thing, folks.
So, yeah, so I posted that John Oliver link, and he's still running. So you can comment on the FCC proposal to revoke the Title II designation, and it's this horrible 30-step link to go through the FCC webpage.
Yep.
So John Oliver put together a website, Go FCC Yourself, that takes you right to the page where you can put your comment in.
Nice.
And what people bottom line have to know is this is bad. Repealing it is not going to be good for you. It's only going to be good for big companies, bottom line.
Right. Before there was the net neutrality rules, there were a lot of attempts to charge for internet access exorbitantly.
Mm-hmm.
Comcast did it, AT&T did it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, charging Netflix extra money to be carried to Comcast customers.
Right, and you know that they're just going to pass that on to us.
Yeah.
In fact, it worked two ways when Comcast did it. They not only charged Netflix more money to be on their service, but they also charged the user more money to access Netflix because they have a competing service.
Yep.
And the more people that use Comcast, or rather that use Netflix, they're not watching Comcast shows.
You know, and still, the funny part that I still find is here in the U.S., we still pay more for internet service.
For slower internet service.
For slower internet service than any other third world country.
Yep.
And yet those other countries, in offering faster service than we get, do very well, thank you.
Yes.
They're still in business. They're still providing internet service for everybody all over the place. It's fast, it's reliable, and gee, they're not going under.
Look, none of those companies are even pretending that they're not making a bucket load of cash.
Yeah.
The real question is they think they can make more cash.
Keeps their stockholders happy.
Well, that's what it's about. And they're publicly traded companies, that's what it's about.
And if you can figure out how to get paid at both ends, that's great.
That's exactly what they're saying. That's exactly what they're saying. So I understand that. I truly do. I get it. And the question is the government supposed to help the average citizen, or is the government supposed to help the big corporations? And that's the what the actual
and the
question comes down
to. The FCC filing is called Restoring Internet Freedom. And so, oh, yeah, I want the internet to be free.
Right.
No, it means it's free for the big companies to charge you more.
Yes. Right. So right. Bottom line, folks, visit that site and do your best to block it.
Yeah, if you're trying to create a new video site, some of the smaller services, This Week in Tech, 5x5, Relay FM, even us, we would have to pay extra to go to Comcast customers. We would have to charge people more to get us, and it's just ridiculous.
Of you listening on the stream, those of you who listen to Swingin' Jazz, Swingin' Blues Radio. You may find that those go away if it becomes too exorbitant for us to continue to offer that service. If we are charged enough more that we can't afford it, those services will simply go away. And that's what net neutrality prevents.
Some people think we should go to metered billing, like electricity and water. The more you use, the more you pay. But do you want to have to stop and think, do I want to watch this movie now because it's going to cost me more in my internet bill?
Mm-hmm.
We already do think about that on with our water and our electricity. Turn your lights off when you're not using them. Turn things off. Don't let the shower run for an hour before you get into it.
Right.
We don't want to have to do that with our internet,
too. And yet
too.
There are things that we cannot, that we do not have control over, like updates.
And ads. All the ads that come in.
And the ads that come in.
There's a way to get paid both ends.
Right.
So the website gets paid to put an ad on there, and then you have to pay the internet provider to see the ad.
Last night, I started a YouTube video, and it had an ad at the beginning. Well, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
This was a 2.5-minute ad.
Yep.
2.5 minutes.
And you couldn't skip it?
And you can't skip it.
Nope.
So I just shut down the tab.
Watch a 30-second YouTube video.
Right, exactly.
And some of the longer YouTube videos will have interstitial ads.
Yep.
So you have the pre-roll, the interstitial, and the post-roll.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I get it. Everybody wants more money. But I really, it was about a 2-minute video, and it was a 2-minute and 30-second ad in front of it. No. That's all.
Well,
no.
And that's the
so
other
even
thing.
If you do want.
You wind up, paying for this stuff, and they still shove those ads in you. I mean, more and more folks are going to complain about that because, if I'm paying for this service, don't feed a lot of ads in my face either. Because if my time is vital that I'm watching something, don't throw a lot of these stupid garbage ads so you can make more money.
Well, and as someone pointed out in the chat room, it's competition. There's no competition. In virtually every city, you have two choices. The phone company and the TV company.
Right.
And cable just gives you faster internet than telephone. There's very few ways around that. And so they don't bother competing with each other.
Right.
And even now we're seeing here in Rochester, we're seeing Greenlight coming in, bringing fiber in at much higher speed and a much lower price than current offerings. And so far, the local companies don't care because it's not that big of a threat yet.
Right, we'll but what, it will be, and we'll when it is, there's a problem.
Yeah, he's growing every week. You know, more and more folks and areas are being added, and Greenlight is slowly growing.
And you go to other countries, and there's 5 or 6 different cable providers, fiber providers in every city.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we get hosed all the way around.
Yep. And hopefully, and of course, there's been tampering with the FCC comment section.
Yeah.
Millions of robots have added their own comments to the section. So I get that the whole thing is screwed up. But the reality is that...
Now, when is this supposed to all take place, the vote?
Early next year, there's going to be December. It's going to be a protest in early December, so it's after that. But the reality is that... it'll be interesting to see what happens. If, in fact, we suddenly start getting charged more because of net neutrality, voters are going to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And
even that, we see that a lot in our store. One of the services we offer in our store is we'll look at your cable bill, and we've learned some of the tricks to lower your cable bill. And one of the biggest ones is you're getting double charged for equipment. You had a problem with your cable box, so you took it in, got a new one. And there's two cable boxes on your bill now.
Yep.
Because they forgot to take the old one off.
Yep.
We had one poor customer had 9 DVRs on her account for a one-room apartment. They never took the old ones off whenever she had a problem. And so people have $200, $300 bills. They grumble, they complain, they pay it because you can't live without cable.
Right.
Well, we're at the point now, but yeah, you can live without cable. And
I have for...
Even if you have cable...
A couple years now.
You can get your bill down. You know, you shouldn't be paying much more than $100 for basic, what we consider basic stuff these days.
Right.
And so people grumble, people complain, but they still pay it because they don't know there's a difference. They don't know there's a better way.
Yeah, well, like you say, as folks know, I cut the cord over 2 years ago. Don't regret it one bit. You know, I mean, yeah, like you said, Steve, between my internet and the service through Roku that I, you know, use, it's less than $100 a year or a month.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Less than $100. And I get all the stations that I want that I had back when I was doing cable. And I don't have to have that stupid phone service that they always want to throw in the bundle, too.
Yep. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, and we've got Tom from Brighton on the line, and thank you for your patience. We'll get to you right when we come back. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Dave, Steve, and Nick at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tom, who's patiently waiting in Brighton, New York, on the line. Hi, Tom. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, hi. I have a question on a backup service, but first, just a brief comment on what you've been speaking about the past few minutes.
Yeah.
Normally, I'm very much in favor, frankly, of the free market. I'm kind of a Republican in that respect. However, you know, the Internet was invented and paid for by the government. And I would think that that gives the government and taxpayers in general a right to, you know, some insulation from the price pressures that would come about if it was left up to the so-called free market.
Yeah, you would certainly think so.
For that reason, I do favor, you know, what's called net neutrality.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
And it was government-sponsored labs that created the Internet, but the government didn't have much direct say in it, and long ago has lost any financial interest in it. It's the big companies, AT&T and Verizon, that are running the wires.
Granted, but you know, when you invent something, you normally have a patent right to it, which the government did not exercise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that, I think, gives it some leeway to say we want the market to be free, we want it to be net neutral, and at least for some extended period of time, that should be the case.
Right, and that's the problem is right now, the FCC wants to revoke net neutrality and let the Internet providers voluntarily police themselves.
Yeah, well, we know how that works.
Right,
exactly.
That's why we're trying to stop this change in the rules.
Yeah.
We want it to be neutral. That we don't want. We want it to be neutral, not free. So we have to stop internet freedom, which is the thing they named it.
And frankly, you know, among the so-called rank and file Republicans, I don't think you find much support for eliminating net neutrality. Really, what it's coming from is from a few very narrow special interests who've made the correct payments to the correct congressmen and senators to get them to vote for this. I mean, there's no secret.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that it's government regulation. And for a lot of people, you don't want any government regulation.
Right.
Well, in this case, the government is regulating it for the good, not for the for the good of the people.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, what was your question?
So, you know, that crash plan has decided to give up support for, I guess, residential types of customers as opposed to commercial customers.
The free service they were offering.
Right.
Well, it's not free. No, I pay for it. It's, it's a nominal fee, about $100 or so per year.
Yep.
And it was very nice in that you can have quite a few machines on the plan. I think it's something like as many as 8 to 10. I only have about 3 or 4. But it is going away next summer, I believe. And so I'm asking what your recommendation is to replace that service.
Well, there's a couple of things that are available. Are you a Mac or a Windows user or what?
Actually, we have both.
Okay. There's a company called Backblaze.
Mm-hmm.
They're $5 a month for unlimited space available for both Mac and Windows.
Unlimited number of machines?
No, per machine.
No, per machine. $5 per machine.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that CrashPlan themselves are pointing at a Carbonite.
Yeah, they are.
Which
That's
is the same $5 per machine. Mm-hmm. And then CrashPlan is going to keep their $10 per machine small business plan, they're calling it. But it's now $10 per machine instead of $5 per machine.
Okay, that's per month.
Per month, yeah.
Right. There's a Cronus True Image, Deja Dupe. I mean, there's a million of them. The question is, how useful are they to you? And really, the only way you can tell is to take a look at each plan and see how it fits into your thing. Now, there is a website called Alternative2.net.
Okay.
And you go into Alternative2.net and type crash plan, and it brings you a list of all of the alternatives that are available for crash plan. In fact, it would be, you know, for whatever software you plugged in. And that at least gives you a starting point for your research. But it is going to have to be research you do, because your plan is going to be very different from my plan.
And a lot depends on how much backup space you need. A lot of people use Google Drive because you get 15 gigs free. And if that's usually enough for your documents. And so then there's no charge for that, which is nice. The one plan that CrashPlan did have that I currently use on several machines, they have a free service where you can back up to a friend's house.
Yeah.
So I have my home computer back up to work and my work computer back up to home. So that gives me the off-site backup for free.
Right.
And that's the service I'm going to miss the most.
And then, of course, there's CrashPlan had it where you could back it up right to their server.
Right, yeah. If you paid the monthly fee, you back up to that. And that's usually what it is. If you want to back up to their services, there's a monthly fee. If you back up to your own service, then there's not. But and so you're wise to have an off-site backup in case of fire, flood, theft. You know, if your computer and the backup drive sitting right next to it are both lost, you lose your data.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have a backup service.
Now, Duplicati, if you scroll up, Duplicati does what you are doing now.
What was that last thing you mentioned?
Duplicati. But again, those are all listed in. I was saying to Steve that's what. That it does what he wants to do. You can back up to another machine.
And a lot of them, so that will use SkyDrive, WebDev, Amazon, Rackspace. So some programs split it in the backup program and the storage space. So you don't you use one backup program and then you save to somebody else's storage space. Yeah. And some people do that as well, especially if they don't have much storage space. You can go to Google Drive or SkyDrive. Amazon S3 is pretty cheap if you don't have a lot of stuff. What is it, a dollar a gig a month or something like that?
Right. But at any rate, the alternative2.net should give you a pretty comprehensive group of stuff to start your research in.
Good. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Right, bye.
Yeah, unfortunately, as I said, every circumstance is different, so we can't recommend one, because what's good for me isn't good for you, isn't good for him. I rolled my own. I've got multiple servers out on the internet, and I back stuff up among them left and right, as well as a couple of other things. But I wrote all those programs in Bash and PHP and Perl and whatever I happen to use for whatever reason, and that certainly wouldn't work for other people very well, I think.
Yeah, one of the unified programs that has their own service like Backblaze or Carbonite for $5 a month, very easy to use for novices. And if you want to roll your own, you know, you can use Jungle Disk or Duplicati or there's one called Arc that I've played with. And so Amazon S3 is 2 cents a gig for the first 50 terabytes.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
No.
No, it is not. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Joel. What's up?
Hi. I've got an Acer laptop that I converted to Windows 10 about a year ago. And ever since then, when I plug in the power supply, the screen goes blank and I can't do a thing with it. Works well on batteries, but I prefer to do it plugged in. Can you help me with that?
Almost sounds like there's a short somewhere between the power cord. Is there an external video port that is close to where the power cord plugs in?
No.
And is it the original power cord?
Yes.
So if you were to plug in an external monitor, would that work?
I don't know. I don't have one.
Because that's one thing we're thinking of is maybe you plug in the power cord, it switches to the external monitor.
Right, exactly.
Uh-huh.
On the keyboard, there's usually a monitor key. It's like F6 or F7 to let you switch between internal monitor and external monitor. You could try that.
Yeah, hold the function key down and hit whatever that key is, and on every keyboard it's slightly different. So
a lot of times
you may have to look at the manual.
There's a little icon that looks like it's supposed to look like two little monitors.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
It just looks like two boxes next to each other.
Yeah.
But you should be able to, by pressing that function, whatever that key is, switch among monitors. So if you have, for some, whatever reason, multiple monitors set up, then it may take two or three hits on that key. You know, hold the function key down, hit the key, wait a couple of seconds. Hold the function key down, hit the key, wait a couple of seconds, etc. Do that three or four times in order to cycle through all the possibilities. And one of them, theoretically, will then light up the machine. Once you've done that, stop.
The internal monitor only.
Yeah, right.
Should be one of the options.
One of the things, though, is now, has this happened since you updated to Windows 10?
Yes.
See,
it was okay on Windows 8.
Yeah, see, here's the problem, folks.
Maybe the driver?
Yeah, the drivers and everything else. You know, I mean, Windows will come across and say, yes, your laptop will run with Windows 10. But you usually have to check with the manufacturer to make sure that it is compatible with Windows 10. Because a lot of the generic drivers will work fine in most of the machines, but they don't always work all the time with other laptops. And so your laptop could have been on the list that said, don't upgrade to Windows 10.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So what you might want to do is go back to your manufacturer.
You said it was Acer?
Acer, yes.
So you're at a plus there because it's a name brand.
So yeah. Go to their website and check to see if there's any issues with Windows 10 running on your specific brand of machine.
And if there's any driver updates, especially for the video.
Right, because they will tell you whether it was recommended, whether they recommended running Windows 10.
Well, regardless of, it's done now. And so the basic thing to do is to figure out how to solve the problem, which
and
is...
go back to the manufacturer.
Right, which is that first try that function key.
Yeah.
And then the other thing to do is to make sure you've got all the updates because, as Dave said, it is certainly possible that the manufacturer has an update for the driver, for the video drivers that could fix that issue. But at this point, if it's set in to be the external monitor, then yep. Try that function key.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, right. Good luck.
Bye.
Good luck. But yeah, for those of you who have not yet upgraded, Dave is absolutely right. You need to make sure that your hardware is upgradable, not only according to Microsoft, but also according to the manufacturer of that hardware. They may recommend before you do an upgrade to, we've said this a million times too, before you do an upgrade to make sure that you update certain drivers and maybe download a couple of other drivers and et cetera, et cetera.
They're also getting ready to close one of the loopholes. Windows 10 came out in, was it July 2016? And it was free for a year, so that's July 2017. It is still currently free if you use assistive technologies.
Right.
Or you say you use assistive technologies.
Right.
They're going to be closing that, I think, in December.
Yep.
So if you still haven't got your free upgrade to Windows 10, download it now, even if you don't install it. Download it while it's still free.
Well, you really should install it because it has to go online to validate, and they will turn that off as well. The big thing, of course, is that Microsoft has said for years that they want to go to a subscription model. You will pay for the privilege of using Windows every single year. If you stop paying, it will stop working. So that's where they're headed. And so all that free nonsense is going away.
Have you noticed, though, on TV, the big push for Chromebooks?
I have.
There are a lot of ads right now. If you folks take heed, they are pushing Chromebooks, just like we have been telling folks, you know. Chromebooks are an answer to that if you don't want to get spyware, malware, viruses, and pay for a operating system yearly, which you're going to have to do with Microsoft, a Chromebook is the answer. And I have turned people onto more and more of the Chromebooks because they say, well, I want to do that. I said, you can do that. Well, what about this? Matter of fact, I had one person wanted to listen to music. I said, no problem. You just go up to the Google Store and download one of the apps, and you can listen to iHeartRadio and any of the others. No right. biggie. You go, seriously?
Tune in, you can listen to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said, the only thing is you got to have wireless. That's the only drawback.
Yeah, except you don't, because I have been in situations where I had no wireless access at all, and I have loaded an SD card mm-hmm. with 128 gigabytes of music and played it locally. No, it's not that hard to do.
No, what I'm saying, though, is if they wanted to connect to the internet.
Right.
You have to. It's all wireless. You don't have like most laptops in that you have a plug that you plug in, and you're connected to the hardwired to the internet. Right. It is all wireless as far as that part.
It is amazing sometimes where people don't realize how much internet they use. You know, my internet's down, so why can't I get my email? I can't play my game. Well, the internet's down. So. Because your game is looking on the internet to load stuff.
Yeah. Everything does nowadays.
Everything is the internet.
So it's very hard. It's very hard to live without it. One of the
even trying to read a book, you got to download it from the internet first.
That's exactly right. One of the interesting things really is that some Chromebook models actually come with a certain amount per month of free cellular data.
Yep.
So if you absolutely have to, you can get online with that. Well, all right. That's it. You wasted another hour of your life with this nonsense, but hang in there because we're only halfway through. We're going to do it again. We're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're halfway through the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Before we go back to the phones, I want to thank all those of you who were kind enough to download my new book. Chromebooks for Seniors is available on the Kindle market. And I want to thank all those of you who have downloaded it. Please leave a
positive
review.
Comment.
Well, leave a comment. I would prefer honest comments, but I would prefer good comments. But in fact, I prefer honest comments. That'll help me whatever my next book is to make it even better. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hi. I'm nice talking to you guys, and I use OS X to start with.
Oh, there you go.
Last week, you mentioned... I caught the last end of it, I think, where you could go online and go to settings and work. I forgot the terminology used, but I think work offline or more protected.
Sure. On Google Drive.
On Google, just go into Google Drive?
Yeah. Here's the deal. We were talking last week about Google Drive itself.
Right.
And how there is something... Okay, normally when you work on Google Drive, you have to be connected to the internet.
Right.
And if that connection to the internet is broken, you cannot work on your Google documents.
Right.
or spreadsheets or presentation programs. However, Google does have something called offline mode. And what it does is it makes copies of your recent documents on your hard drive. So if you lose connection to the internet, you can still work. And then when you regain connection, it syncs everything up. And it's real easy to do from the main Google Drive page. In the upper right-hand corner,
icon.
The little gear icon, that's what it's called. It's just a gear.
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, and you hit that and you come to settings, and I think it's like the fourth set. Oh, Steve has it open.
Yeah, it's okay. I got another little question I've been pondering.
Yeah.
I'm in my 70s now, and somewhere down the road, I hope it's many years, I'll probably be going to that great computer room in the sky.
Sure.
If it's the sky, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it started me thinking. Now, every year I open a new file, and I title it My 2017 Photos.
Right.
And after the year's over, I move it over to my Western Digital 8-terabyte MyCloud.
Sure.
So I have probably hundreds of thousands of stuff in my iCloud. Now, my nieces, when I tell my nieces, the one thing I'm going to say probably is that Western Digital hard drive, and I'll probably leave a note to my nieces. I say, to access all my pictures, go to this device.
Right.
Now, do you think my nieces will be able to plug it in and be able to access it without any problems, or is there any special thing that I have to be aware of?
No, that would be probably okay. I mean, are your daughters tech savvy? Your grand?
So I got three nieces. I think so.
All right. So
at least one of them is.
They shouldn't have a lot of trouble. A lot of people are saving them also on DVDs, writable DVDs.
Although it takes thousands of DVDs to make one hard drive.
Although it will take thousands of DVDs. They're also uploading them to things like Google Photos. And depending on the speed of your internet connection, that can also take a very long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
The two bigger issues are, how far into the future are you planning? Because the interfaces change. So right now we're going from a USB-A interface to a USB-C interface.
Right.
So they may need a cable adapter, which is great and easy. But eventually that drive will fail, and so you may want to have a backup copy of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So if you're just thinking months, you know, no problem. But if you're looking at decades.
Yeah, things change so fast. They have to change over to new formats.
I still have boxes of floppies in my closet that I have nothing to read on.
So do I, and I don't know why I'm keeping them.
And zip disks and SciQuest disks.
Yes. I have an 8-inch Bernoulli disk that I can't. But at any rate, the point here is you need, if you're looking to future-proof your stuff, then you want to have it in multiple places, and one of those places you want to have it is online. Because it's almost always probable, shall we say, that people will be able to access data online, because it'll be saved in a format that any browser, for example, can read.
Yeah, I did pay for a service once for online.
Well, Google Drive, it's in settings for Google Photos.
Yeah.
You can set up Google Photos so that all the photos you upload are essentially what they call free.
Uh-huh.
If the photo is less than 16 megapixels, I want to say, it doesn't count against your storage.
Right.
So I've got about 15,000 photos up on Google Photos, and I'm using less than a gig. I'm using a couple of hundred meg for a couple of photos that are just enormous. But most of them are 16 megapixels or fewer or less, I guess. Yeah. And whatever I want to do, I can do that without any trouble.
Yeah, I've got close to, I think, close to, I want to say 4,000 photos up there.
Yeah.
And again, they're up there, they're secure, and it doesn't matter whether I'm here in Rochester or say I'm out in the West Coast visiting a friend, and I log on to, you know, my Google account, I can pull up all the photos. I can show them on my phone.
The other nice thing is I can set up folders on Google Photos and share that folder, and therefore any picture I put in that folder gets automatically shared. So I have a folder called Francesco Family, and I've shared it with all of our family, including, you know, in-laws and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of I just copy those into there, or I say they're available into there, and bang, everybody gets access to them, and I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, well, that's under Google Photos. Yep.
Googlephotos.google.com.
And that actually brings up the bigger question, is you got to make sure someone has a list of all your passwords.
That's exactly right. Yep. Once you share it, it's under, they can get at it under their account.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
But if you want someone to manage it after you pass, then somebody's got to have your password.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, I make a lot of slideshow type of DVDs, you know.
And sure.
I have a lot of those for my Navy time and military time, so on and so forth, and personal family stuff, and I'm good at that. So a lot of that, they'll have those, but that's good info. So I'll look into googlephotos.com and work on it, like you suggest.
Perfect. Photos.google.com.
Photos.google.com. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Have fun.
Alrighty.
And that Google Drive offline mode is only available in Chrome. Or you install Google Backup and Sync app, and then it does it automatically anyway. Yeah.
Right. But you know, he brings up an excellent point. So thank you for that, Bob. There's. You know, what happens to our stuff when we're gone? And nobody likes to think about that, and maybe you don't care what happens to it, but many people are, you know, planning for the future and other people and et cetera, and they want at least to think about that.
As part of your will, you have to include your master password list.
Exactly,
so
right.
The executors can get to the rest of your passwords.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. I just wanted to make a comment about the Chromebooks, about having to have Wi-Fi or, you know, Internet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times how I solve that problem is I let my phone create a hotspot.
Yep.
Almost.
And I get on it that way, you know. Most of us have pretty good data plans because that's what we mostly use.
Right.
You know. So,
and almost all smartphones have the hotspot feature.
Yeah, so it's a real easy way to be able to connect to the Internet, especially on the Chromebook. You're usually not doing anything that intense anyways.
Right.
And, you know, I find it very, very easy, and the speed's not bad.
Right. And by the way, that may be one of the things that we end up paying for if net neutrality goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm all for net neutrality. So
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
That's a very good point. Our phones are capable, if we have the right data plan, you know, particularly for those people who have an unlimited data plan, the ability to create a hotspot and have up to four. Most of them let you have up to four devices connect to that hotspot directly, and that's a pretty nice thing. So. Think about that as an opportunity to add another way to access the Internet to your system.
And Wi-Fi is pretty common, and in the few places you can't get Wi-Fi, you usually can get cellular.
Yeah.
Right.
Although there are still some rural areas that still don't have cellular coverage.
Oh, yes, there are.
Which goes back to the government-sponsored broadband initiative. We want to get broadband everywhere.
Right.
Well, some people don't even have telephones.
Right. And, of course, broadband is such a slippery term now at the moment. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Joel?
Hi, guys. I have two questions for you.
Yeah.
First, I'm trying to listen to the show from my Apple Watch, and I found that TuneIn Radio, which carries Jazz 901, the app does not work on the watch. iHeartRadio doesn't carry Jazz 901.
Right.
So do you have a way of listening to your show on the Apple Watch?
Can you listen to the stream directly? Yeah, you might be able to listen to the stream directly. Can you open a web browser on the watch?
I don't have an Apple Watch, so I can't help you there. TuneIn doesn't work on the watch.
Does the Jazz 90 on the watch, but it doesn't do anything.
Right. Can you load? There's a Jazz 90.1 app.
The Jazz 90.1 app does not have a parallel watch app.
Okay. Then I honestly don't know what to tell you.
You're just going to have to carry your phone.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's what I'm trying to avoid. Yeah.
Well, but you're doing it now because you're clearly talking on it.
I'm talking on the watch with my AirPods.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I'm sorry. I do not know quite what to tell you at this point. I suspect you can get the podcast. Oh, can you run YouTube on your watch?
I do not know. I have not seen that as an app for the watch.
Check it out.
Okay, let's go to my second question. You guys seem to keep up on technology pretty well, and I was wondering if you could share maybe some of the sites that you use to keep up with things.
Sure.
AskNick.com.
AskNick.com.
There you go.
Of course, AskNick.com. Yeah. I follow that regularly on Facebook.
Thank you. Well, the actual AskNick.com is a site I put together that has news on it, and if you were to go there, you would find that it's set up in sections. So there's security section, a Google section, an Apple section, a Microsoft section, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever news I currently found fascinating is there. And so far, so right now, there's only a couple of Google stories and three Apple stories because, well, it's been Thanksgiving, not a lot of news. But there are 17 security stories and like that. So 15 miscellaneous stories. So usually
I do highly recommend that. I'm wondering where do you guys go to get your news?
I look at pretty much every site there is, but where I get a vast majority of my news is from news.google.com. They have a technology section.
There's so many places
in Google News
that over the years that we've tapped into.
Right. Yep. The nice thing about the Google News technology section is that it aggregates news from everywhere. The last few days has all been about Black Friday deals and yada yada yada, but in general some of the best stories that are out there I can find through that.
Okay, thank you guys.
Yeah, absolutely, thank you. And we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
We are.
And, you know, we've been looking at the Apple Watch. Joel from Pittsburgh called in the last segment and wanted to know why he couldn't get the show on his Apple Watch and with the TuneIn app, and he should be able to. I'm not seeing anything that says it doesn't work.
We're wondering that maybe you have to have the pay version to get radio stations.
Oh, that's a very good question.
Yeah, because they offer TuneIn Premium service, and that lists...
That may be one of the ones you get premium rather than free.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Which would be interesting because it's a public broadcast.
Well, yeah, it's just weird. But it, There's nothing online that says people aren't getting it to work, so I don't quite at this point know what to say. I don't know. Anyway, we should probably read some news. I got to find an interesting one here.
While you're looking, one of the for Joel, because I know he also does work with Macs. I read the Macworld blog, iMore blog, Jason Snell's Six Colors. He used to be with Macworld, and then he went off on his own. In fact, that was an interesting series of blogs. Deciding to go off on your own and leave a big company and the support and benefits behind, and that's a huge decision. But what's interesting is they keep running his articles in Macworld. So.
Yeah.
So now I'm a freelance journalist instead of a in-house journalist.
Yeah. So he gets paid less. He has no benefits, but it's the same.
Yeah. he always does for the Apple conference calls. He goes into great depth and pulls out these great charts that pretty much all the blogs use to show all the charts. But I have a huge list of websites that I look at to try to keep up with what's going on just in the Mac world, and then use Nick's site to keep up with the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, I try to list anything I find that's interesting. I don't, you know, I've got a dozen sites that I go to.
CNET, and I mean,
CNET,
Magazine,
PC World, blah, blah, blah.
List goes on and on.
Hacker News is kind of for the deep techie people.
Yep.
Right. Right. The problem is, you know, you go to 20 websites and they all have the same
20
five articles.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, it depends on the day as to whether or not there's anything. There was nothing Google yesterday. And I'll sometimes go a week and not see anything really useful about Microsoft at all.
The other thing, though, I caution folks is, you know, you can go all to all these different sites. And just like anything else, you're going to get different opinions.
Right.
That's why you've got just not read one and think that that's gospel just because mm-hmm. it's on the internet.
Of course, on the other hand, you read the same thing on a dozen blogs. Look at the source.
Yeah.
One guy reported that, and suddenly it's all over the internet.
Right, yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you learn over time what you can take and rely on and other stuff that you got to be cautious about.
Right. Here's an interesting article for those of you who are, since Uber is now in Rochester, for those of you who are Uber users or perhaps Uber drivers. Uber disclosed on Tuesday that hackers had stolen 57 million driver and rider accounts, and the company kept the data breach secret for more than a year after paying a $100,000 ransom. The deal was arranged by the company's chief security officer and under the watch of the former chief executive, Travis Kalanick. The security officer, Joe Sullivan, has been fired. Mr. Kalanick was forced out in June, although he remains currently on Uber's board. Two hackers stole data about the company's riders and drivers, including phone numbers, email addresses, and names from a third-party server, and then approached Uber and demanded $100,000 to delete their copy of the data. Uber acquiesced to the demands and then went further. The company tracked down the hackers and pushed them to sign non-disclosure agreements. That'll teach them, according to people who are familiar with the matter. To further conceal the damage, Uber executives also made it clear that if the payout had been part of, made it appear as if the payout had been part of a bug bounty, a common practice among technology companies in which they pay hackers to attack their software to test for soft spots. The details of the attack remained hidden until Tuesday. Uber said it had discovered the breach as part of a broad investigation into Uber's business practices. The breach at Uber is far from the most serious exposure of sensitive customer information, of course. Two breaches that Yahoo announced in 2016 eclipse Uber's in size. An attack disclosed in September by Equifax, the consumer credit reporting agency, exposed a far deeper trove of personal information for a far larger group of people. But the handling of the breach underscores the extent to which Uber executives were willing to go to protect the $70 billion ride-hailing giant's reputation and business, even at the potential cost of breaking users' trust and, perhaps more important, state and federal laws. The New York Attorney General's office said on Tuesday that it had opened an investigation into the matter. So, are you an Uber driver or rider? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And the list of pwned accounts is up to 4.8 million. This might push it over 5
billion. That would be 4.8
billion. Yeah, 4.8 billion pwned accounts. So this might push it over 5 billion. So if you've used any password on multiple services, you're screwed and stop doing it.
Yeah, yeah. We keep telling people to don't use the same password twice.
And, no,
and people get saying, but I'm too stupid to remember multiple passwords. Yeah. No, you're not.
And through no fault of your own, that password gets lost in these breaches.
Yep.
And so if you use the same password, you know, Yahoo, 3 billion passwords were lost. If you use the same password you did at Yahoo that you do at Amazon, the bad guys have your Amazon password and can order stuff on your credit card.
That's right. And they will try.
And now that we're moving into more shopping seasons now, be aware of the fake emails from UPS or Amazon or FedEx.
Yeah, warning folks, you got to click on this site to claim your package.
When there's a problem with your order, click here to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yep. Ignore all of those.
Yeah.
Right. If you absolutely need to, hand type in the site you're supposed to go to. The site you know is the site for your
stuff.
Or
a lot of them have phone numbers that you can call. There's still this thing called the telephone. So if you get one from FedEx or Postal Service, you can still call them.
But don't Google a phone number because those are all usually wrong, too.
Yeah.
We had three customers in the past week that had problems with their HP printer. So they Googled HP Help and called fake HP tech support.
Yep. The big thing is when you order something online, you get a confirmation email.
Mm-hmm.
Save that one. And if you get something that says, there's been a problem with your account, go back to that original email and click the link in there because that one will be legit.
And if you get a confirmation email from something you didn't order, delete it.
Delete it.
Because that's another way they fake you out.
Oh,
my God, I don't want to pay $5,000 for that. I better cancel the order.
Yeah.
I got a rash of those last few weeks. And so far, as it turns out, I haven't been sued by anybody.
Yeah.
No money's come out of my account.
Oh, gee.
I haven't heard from any lawyers.
I won the Italian lottery, and they haven't paid me yet.
Unbelievable.
Because I didn't pay the finder's fee.
Oh, the finder's fee.
Or that's like the one that I got, you know, the phone call, which I didn't answer, saying that there's trouble with my M&T account and that I better, you know, quick call because, you know, my all the money's going to be locked.
Yeah. I'm thinking,
okay.
Yeah,
lock it.
Be very careful.
I don't have an account with you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, be very careful about Googling things or Bing or whatever search engine you use because the ads are always displayed first and the ads can be fake.
And they have a little tiny, very discreet green ad button that tells you this is an ad, but it's very tiny.
And there's a new thing now with invisible characters. So was it WhatsApp? 1 million people downloaded a fake WhatsApp app because it came from WhatsApp Inc. space.
Yep.
And so it looked like it was WhatsApp Inc., so we downloaded it. 1 million people downloaded this fake app because there was a space in the name that you couldn't see.
And the thing of it is, folks, that you have to be aware of, these people out there, they can copy a website. And you would swear up and down, and we'd agree with you, 100%. It looks as official as anything.
The fakes are getting better and better.
Because that's what they're doing. They're grabbing all that information and, you know, images and sounds and whatever from that particular, say, bank website.
Right.
To fake you out thinking that you're going to that site. But you got to pay attention to that URL up at the top, the website.
Yep. If you can display it on your computer, you can copy it from your computer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So absolutely be aware that any website can be faked. And the only way to... I've been buying some 3D filament.
From random websites you've never bought from before.
I've never bought from before. But I've started to get, and God knows, you know, you look at something on Facebook and suddenly you're getting stuff.
Yeah.
At the address that I signed up on Facebook with, so I know that's where it's coming from because I don't use that for anything else. I've started getting notices about 3D filament packages and you won this contest that I never signed up for with that address and blah, 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 blah. So, you just ignore all that stuff. Pay attention. Everybody, look. everybody's greedy. And the minute you see something that says you just want a $2,000 3D printer, your heart beats a little faster.
Ooh, yay.
On the other hand,
I don't remember entering that, but I must have.
If you haven't entered that contest, you probably didn't win, or if you didn't enter with that address. And so that's why one of the things that I do is I use different addresses to enter contests with. And one of the beautiful things about Gmail is they allow plus addresses. So if I have asknick@gmail.com, I can also sign up for a contest at asknick@gmail.com, and that's fine. But now it's mingled with all my other email. I can also say asknick+contest@gmail.com. The email still comes to Ask Nick, but now I can filter into another place for plus contest. So, A, I don't see it cluttering up my main email.
Mm-hmm.
B, when I go in and look at it, I can see what's what. And it makes my life much, much easier. And it can be plus anything. So I can, for example, I just bought some filament for Maker Geeks. And so I had them send, the address I use is asknick+makergeeks@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get any mail from anybody that says plus Maker Geeks, I know who sold my address.
There you go.
And
that's free. Gmail is free, and that plus concept works free.
And the same thing for things that are on sale for too good to be true. It probably is. We had a couple of customers this week, you know, looking at Black Friday deals. Somebody needed a Windows 10. Microsoft's retail price is $120. Well, they found this website that had it listed for $27. Ooh, I can buy that. It's only $27.
Yeah.
No, that's way too cheap to be legitimate.
Yeah.
You think?
You're going to do it's
Windows
one of two
7,
things.
Maybe, but Windows 10?
Right. It's one of two things. Either you're not going to get anything.
Yeah.
And there goes your $27. Bye-bye. Or you're going to get a copy that actually is already registered to somebody else. And now Microsoft is going to come after you.
Yeah, and they're reselling it, how many times before they go off the grid.
They sold it once legitimately, and now they're selling it a billion times. Why didn't they sell it for $10? What the hell's the difference?
Mm-hmm. But it says TrustGuard on their site.
Yeah, I can copy that, too.
Yeah. That's where, again, where
right. And who is that? Is that even a real company?
Right.
And whose trust is it guard?
The word trust in it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
It's got a green shield.
Well, that's like for years, all the squatters, right?
Yeah.
Microsoft with a zero instead of the O.
Yep.
Most because we're still stupidly using Arial as a font. You can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. PayPal with an L or a one instead
of the
an
L.
Yeah. Or capital I. Yep.
So you don't necessarily see that it's slightly different, and therefore you don't see that it is entirely wrong.
Yep.
And so you have to be a little careful.
If one character is wrong, the entire page is wrong.
Right. It's just going to one of those copied sites that looks legit. Yes. But is not.
Somebody put a lot of work into this fake site.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can, of course, give us a call at 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, and we will see you in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we have Ernesto from Penn Parenton on the line. Hi there. What's up?
Hi, guys. Listen, I have three antivirus programs, anti-spyware, Viper, and Malwarebytes. Now, when I do each scan, do I have to exit out of the other ones while one is scanning, or it's just okay that they're there and you scan with each one individually?
Well, if you are using multiple antivirus programs, they can interfere with each other. But if you are using an antivirus program plus Malwarebytes, plus Super Anti-Spyware, they generally know about each other. At least the major ones know about Malwarebytes and Anti. The major ones all know about each other, so you shouldn't have any trouble.
Although I generally run them consecutively. I don't try to run them.
Oh, yeah. You don't run them simultaneously.
Simultaneously.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But you know, if you do a scan, well, your antivirus should be running all the time anyway.
Right.
Sure. But if you want to run Super Anti-Spyware and then Malwarebytes or the other way around, yes, run them one at a time is better because it's just going to be faster.
They do overlap a little bit, but they both find different things. And so you don't want one to find and remove it before, and the other one finds it but then can't remove it because it's been removed by the first one.
Right.
But it does take longer to run them one after the other instead of at the same time.
Yeah, because Viper takes forever.
Right.
So I usually run that the last.
And, yeah, there you go.
Let that one run overnight.
Right.
Yeah. It takes a couple hours.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen. Thanks for the help.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. That's a good tip. You can generally set things up to run automatically under Windows. It's called the at command or the timer setup, and you can say at 3 a.m. run this program.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And that brings up a big problem that I just read about on Security Now. All of the antiviruses tested will skip signed files.
Right.
Even if they're signed with an expired certificate, a fake certificate, the wrong certificate for the file. So the researchers, and I'll find this link and post it, the researchers were able to put a known malicious program, put a fake signature on it. They just grabbed the signature file off some other app, and it made it past the AV program.
Yeah.
Because that will slow down the scan to check the signatures. And we don't want our scans to be slow.
Right. But if you're one of these people who lets the computer scan overnight,
you
don't care if it's a little slow.
Yep.
And frankly, these days with people's machines being as fast as they are, scanning doesn't really slow it down much. It really depends on the speed of your hard drive more than the speed of your processor.
The first time you let it run and watch it count to 100,000 files, 200,000 files, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably have a million files on your drive.
It likely
90%
so, yes.
of them are Windows files, system files.
Right.
But they picked one giant registry. Everything else is one little tiny file, but one giant registry. Really? Why couldn't you have done it the other way around?
Right. It's important to be aware that they will do that. Many of them will give you the opportunity to scan signed files anyway, but you have to set that up.
Mm-hmm. And the other one is inside compressed archives. Because a lot of times the malicious file will come down zipped. And so it has to look inside the zip file to scan for malicious files, and that takes longer too.
Right.
So a lot of those are turned off completely.
Right, and if you really want full testing of everything, then you need to turn all that stuff on. Many of us download files that are compressed. And if you load something from the Windows store, it's compressed.
Right.
And so if you're not checking compressed files, you're possibly letting in the worst stuff.
Yeah. But the other more disconcerting thing that this shows is that the bad guys are now signing their files. The whole point of having a digitally signed file is you could trust that it's been vetted and where it came from. Not anymore. The bad guys are buying signatures, or they're just grabbing the signature file from another program and throwing it in.
Right. So you cannot trust signed files. Theoretically, if you really know what you're doing, you can figure out where that...
You can check the signature yourself.
Right, where that signature came from and check the chain of that signature and figure out if it's legitimate or not. But most people cannot. Most people do not. And so, in general, my suggestion is that you make sure that you scan signed files as well. Does it take longer? Yes. Is it more secure? Absolutely. So do it.
One of the theories was that by having a signed file, you can trust where it came from. And now we're seeing more, you know, as I mentioned, the bad guys are signing. But average people are just going to say, yeah. So even if you're the OS popped up and said this signature is invalid, or you try to go to a website it's a holiday weekend, their SSL cert expired and no one found it yet, people just click okay, go ahead.
Yep.
So that's and the bad guys are counting on that.
Yep, and that's exactly how it works. We just want to get to where we want to get to. We don't want to have to think in between. The problem is that's what the bad guys are indeed hoping for. So when you install something, please read every screen. It's one of the things that separates the PC gurus from the PC users. Read every screen.
And if you don't understand something, call us.
And that's where I've said for a long time, people have gotten click happy.
Yep.
Very click happy. Yeah. And they just go ahead and then they go, well, how did that get on my machine? You accepted it. No, I didn't. Yes, you did.
You clicked
yes
somewhere.
You were just so happy clicking, and that's the whole trouble. You can click, say, two or three times on that one particular one, and then all of a sudden it'll skip past the other two
They'll make it easy
screens
to click.
That you should have taken the time to read and click on, but because you were impatient and clicked multiple times, it bypasses those. So they go, oh, it remembers. Yeah, this. So you agreed to it.
That's right. And then you're right. And we used to see that. We still see that a lot with toolbars.
Oh, yes.
Suddenly, you know, you've got 40 toolbars on your screen. You can't see any websites. And you say, well, I don't know. I didn't install them. Yeah, actually, you did. Yeah, you did. And so you need to be more careful. You need to read every screen. You need to not just read it, but you need to comprehend it. And clearly, one of the things this nation has fallen down on is teaching reading comprehension. We see that everywhere. And one of the places we see it is when people are installing new software. Do you want to install this toolbar? No. No, I do not need that toolbar. So, and half the time, the toolbar doesn't have anything to do with My Way is a company that has a million different toolbars out there. And they are click bait, and they are ad,
and they sound good.
Companies,
Good. Do I want coupons? Yes. Well, that means ads.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, My Way is under a dozen different names, but they buy their way into a lot of these free software or shareware software downloads when you go to places like Major Geeks or download.com or one of those.
Mm-hmm. They're all there.
90% of those downloads have some sort of toolbar, mostly from a company like My Way, installed in them, too. So,
and that's one of the reasons they're free, is they're getting paid somewhere.
They're getting paid somewhere. Ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And so what happens is you start to download it, and one of the things it says is, do you want to install the My Way toolbar or whatever? And because you're click happy, you just go, yes, yeah, absolutely, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get surprised when your computer is slow and your browser is slow. Half the screen is taken up with this junk you didn't even know you installed. And then you start to complain. Well, I didn't want that, but you installed it.
Yep.
You legally
consented to it.
You consented to it.
One of the big ones I get a kick out of is Genio. They bill themselves as a newspaper-style homepage. And everyone goes, oh, yeah, I want the news. No, the point of newspapers is to sell ads. The news is secondary.
Yeah. They're not lying. It is a newspaper-style
Yep, they're not lying. You get lots and lots and lots of ads.
Yep.
And
well, that's what's in a newspaper, with a few stories.
We had two customers this week that tried to upgrade to the latest OS, and it failed and wouldn't run, and they had to bring it into us, and it turned out to be malware. The malware's not compatible with the new OS, and so it crashed when it was installing. So as hard as it is to make legitimate programs compatible with new OSs, the bad guys
have the same problem.
And most of the time they don't bother
Yeah, right.
Go into that, you know, quality assurance. Just make the program.
They don't care. And so it is important before you upgrade something to make sure that your machine is clean, that it is the viruses are gone and all of that.
The proxy server just stopped me from going to Genio. Yeah. As malware, yes. Thank you. I knew that.
All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank all of those of you who called in. I want to thank all of those of you who bought my book. I want to thank all those of you who were listening. I just want to thank everybody. I'm full of the milk of human kindness, and I love you all. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, who's a bit of a curmudgeon, and Steve Ray, who's a complete curmudgeon, and me, Nick Francesco.
If I'm a complete one, what are you?
I'm beyond that. I'll tell you that right now. And you've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week, and we will see you in just 166 hours.